Our next speaker was an expert witness last summer, the hearings in July that took place in Washington that was sponsored by Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, which was to investigate. Yes, that's right. Cynthia McKinney embodies the word courage. In the dictionary, you look under courage and you see her picture. Yes, she's one of the few to speak out about 9/11. Now, these hearings were for the purpose of taking a real hard look at the 9/11 Commission report, which had been out just 1 year at that point. And the title of this conference was, Did the 9/11 Commission Get It Right 1 Year Later? And this gentleman has a website which, if you want to stay informed and read in deep, in-depth analysis of our political events, from the Bush family right down to what's going on in the Middle East and Central Asia, all over the world, you need to look at this website and stay in touch with it. TheWayneMatsonReport.com. Please welcome Wayne Matson.
Thank you, Les. I spoke at Riverside Church on the second anniversary of 9/11, and here we are at the fifth anniversary. We're still asking the same questions and more, but I have a feeling that soon, with political changes coming in Washington, we're finally going to get some answers. And it's none too soon. We've heard a lot about culpability of people involved in the cover-up of what actually occurred on that day back in September 2000. One group that's an unnamed group of co-conspirators are my fellow journalists in Washington, D.C. They long ago traded their journalistic ethics for access to this White House. And save for our matron saint, Helen Thomas, There's very few of us in Washington are willing to pay the price for conducting independent journalism. Somebody asked me the other day what my next book's going to be, and I said, well, probably I'll title it How to Overthrow a Fascist Regime on $15 a Day. But I've grown used to eating canned tuna fish. As a matter of fact, I get more than my recommended daily allowance of mercury. No discussion about the criminals that were behind 9/11 is complete without looking into the history of the Bush family, or as I call it, the Bush Crime Syndicate. I hate to be plugging another book here, but my latest book, Jaded Tasks, Brass Plates, Black Ops, and Big Oil, The Blood Politics of George Bush and Company, was an effort to show three generations of this family what they've done to this country and how this family and their cronies could certainly be involved in the types of cover-ups and criminal activities we've heard about this afternoon. Let's go back to the grandfather of W, Prescott Bush, Wall Street securities dealer, banker for Brown Brothers, Nazi financier. What you may not have heard is what occurred in 1933, right after the inauguration of one of our greatest presidents, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And the Democratic Party should start getting back in line with his policies before it's too late for them. FDR, a native of this great state of New York, was almost overthrown in a coup d'etat launched by people associated with Wall Street bankers, the DuPonts, Averill Harriman, and Prescott Bush. They were going to use 100,000 veterans to march on Washington, take over the Capitol, declare Franklin Roosevelt medically unfit to continue to serve in the office as president, and then they were going to set up something called the Department of General Affairs that would conduct all the security and political operations on behalf of the disabled President Roosevelt. The Department of General Affairs looks an awful lot like the Department of Homeland Security. And where did that term come from? When I was commissioned as a naval officer in 1975, I took an oath to the Constitution of the United States of America, not a homeland. Prescott Bush financed a homeland. It was called Nazi Germany. Okay, after the war, young George H.W. Bush, with a ton of money, moves to Texas and starts a company called Zapata. Well, it's not long before H.W. Bush is involved with the Central Intelligence Agency. And as we know from the Watergate tapes, Nixon himself referred to the assassination of President Kennedy in 1963 as the Cuba thing. The Cuba thing involved George H.W. Bush, who, by the way, is one of the few people in the United States of America who does not remember where he was on November 22nd, 1963. I'll tell you where he was. He was in Dallas. President Nixon, after the outreach to China, makes George H.W. Bush the first U.S. envoy to Beijing. Well, it's not long before old George H.W. Bush is cutting all kinds of business deals with people who would eventually become the board of directors for what we now know is China Incorporated. You see their showrooms all throughout the United States. They're called Walmart. But Nixon got in trouble, as we know. Watergate break-in. And by the way, if we had this kind of Washington press corps that we have today in 1972, we would have had two terms of Richard Nixon, followed by two terms of President Spiro Agnew, and probably an earlier term for George W. Bush. Nixon had to fix the problems at the Republican National Committee. Oh, he fixed them. He sent George H.W. Bush over there to be the chairman. So Mr. Cover-Up continued the cover-up. 1980, we find George H.W. Bush in Paris negotiating with the captors of U.S. hostages in Iran to make sure that they were not going to be released prior to the election, thus depriving Jimmy Carter the re-election of the presidency of the United States. George H.W. Bush consorting with enemies of the United States. Not the first time. Certainly not the last time. In 1981, shortly after Ronald Reagan is inaugurated, he's leaving the Washington Hilton Hotel. One John Hinckley fires shots at President Reagan. That night, John Hinckley's brother Scott was due to have dinner with Neil Bush, the son of the Vice President of the United States, George H.W. Bush. No questions were asked, except by very few Washington journalists. At the same time, Ronald Reagan, who of course was given a cold blood transfusion at GW Hospital, many doctors say that actually helped bring up about his Alzheimer's disease, but that was pretty good for George H.W. Bush because he ran a covert intelligence activity in the basement of the White House with Oliver North to violate the law to trade weapons to Iran for the release of hostages and using the proceeds to illegally fund the Contras in Nicaragua. 1989, George H.W. Bush is president. He invades Panama on very flimsy reasons, really to get rid of one of the co-conspirators in the Iran-Contra affair, Manuel Noriega, who is now a guest of the Club Fed. George H.W. Bush is also involved in selling WMDs to Saddam Hussein during this period of time. In 1992, lame duck George H.W. Bush engages U.S. troops in Somalia, leaving that mess in the hands of President Clinton. Not the only mess. I was recently informed by a FBI employee who was an Arabic translator who looked at the documents from the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, and he said that many of the documents were never translated from Arabic into English, never presented to the grand jury or the actual juries that heard the cases against the perpetrators, because they contained information about the involvement of Osama bin Laden in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing from his base of operations in Sudan. Now, I received a French intelligence document that states unequivocally, until 1995, Osama bin Laden was under the operational control of the CIA and Britain's MI6, which means Osama bin Laden, according to evidence that was never presented by the two major prosecutors, Michael Chertoff and Patrick Fitzgerald, was never introduced as evidence because it was a smoking gun to show that in 1993, the perpetrators of that bombing of the World Trade Center were under the operational control of the Central Intelligence Agency. The perfidy of the Bush crime syndicate doesn't stop there. During the Clinton administration, the Bush crime syndicate was negotiating with the Taliban of Afghanistan for rights to build the Central Asian gas pipeline from Turkmenistan through Afghanistan to Pakistan. Who was involved in some of these negotiations? The Carlyle Group. It's the slush fund that replaced BCCI for the Bush crime syndicate. The other slush fund they had was temporary. That was called Enron. When they funded the 2000 election, which was stolen by Bush, they were able to wipe their hands of Enron and poor old Kenny Boy Lay. Well, so where does that bring us? 9/11. People say, are you saying that the President of the United States could have sanctioned the deaths of 3,000 innocent people on 9/11? Here's the record. As I've told people, the only difference between George W. Bush and serial killer Ted Bundy is Ted Bundy got better grades in college. And then we have the Iraq War, based on a series of lies. We know that from the Senate Intelligence Committee. It was based on incorrect, false information being fed to this White House by con men like Ahmad Chalabi, drunkards like Curveball, and other insidious people, including some of the major architects of this failed policy, those who signed the Project for the New American Century, and you know their names. What should happen to these people, the Bushes? Well, after the release from prison, if they ever are, they should be barred from ever holding public office in this country ever again. Nor should they ever be allowed to serve on any corporate board or board for a nonprofit entity. We need to start holding these people accountable because we haven't in the past. This November election is going to be very, very significant, probably more so than the last two that were stolen. John Conyers, as chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, I have faith, will begin the process of impeachment hearings. And that's very significant because with that power, he has the power to subpoena witnesses whether they want to appear or not. If they don't want to appear, federal marshals will end up at their offices or at their homes and physically take them down to the Congress to testify. If they perjure themselves, that's a felony and they'll go to jail. So this election, of course, is very significant, and we need to also look at the future of having a truth commission, not a truth and reconciliation commission. There's no reconciling with these people. But that truth commission should have the power to subpoena and, if need be, recommend indictments to the Justice Department. As I've said often, you know, how do you sum up the Bushes? And all I can say is, and I can say this here in this area, the Bushes make the Sopranos look like Ozzy and Harriet Nelson. Thank you very much.
Wayne, being a Washington insider, has to know an awful lot that the normal populace would never get to even have an inkling of. I just want to ask him, with his knowledge of the buzz inside the Beltway, what does he hear? Wayne, what do you hear from your colleagues about the issues of 9/11 truth and the possibility for the truth to break out at some point here soon?
Well, one of my greatest sources of information are people who are formerly and currently with the U.S. intelligence community, something I was once with myself. And I can tell you that they're firmly convinced, many of them, not all of them, some of them are still in that transition process. Many are firmly convinced that the purging of all the various intelligence agencies, of naysayers, people that weren't going along to get along, was conducted because the Bush administration had to eliminate those who could potentially testify to the fact that what 9/11 really was a well-coordinated and compartmentalized operation to bring about a fascist coup in the United States. Now, these are people that have anywhere from 12 to 25 years experience with the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and other agencies. And this is coming from people who have seen these things from the inside. As one thing I'll tell you from one person I talked to, who was actually on duty at what's called the National Security Operations Center at the National Security Agency, NSA, on 9/11, was in an area called the Tactical Communications Area, and distinctly heard on the speakers two pilots communicating over Pennsylvania stating, "We are now engaging the target." The target was United Flight 93.